Hello and welcome to DNF1 with myself, Glenn Martin, and Garth Martin today. This is round 11 and we are at the Hungaroring in Hungary. We've got 70 laps awaiting on this tight, twisty track, which means tyres are going to be suffering. The weather for this weekend, we're looking at Saturday and Sunday, both being up in the low 30s. Track temperatures, therefore, are going to be in the low 50s. And in turn, we may have the chance of thundery storms over both days. It's about a 60% chance of that, and some rain maybe overnight to clean the track, which will make it more difficult for them off the line on the Sunday, as well as for qualifying on the Saturday. The compound that we've actually got this weekend, the tyres are the C2, C3 and C4, so right in the middle. So as a result, the best strategy is not always obvious, with different approaches when yielding a similar overall race time, depending on the team's circumstances. That's why we've obviously seen some technically intriguing races at Hungary, especially last year with Hamilton going for the late pit stop to actually get round Max and then chase him down in the last sort of half of the race. And it'll be interesting to see if Red Bull are ready for that this season, if they even get as far as actually the middle of the race, the two of them. We will wait and see, but it does actually mean that there's some interesting challenges for the teams at this particular track. But what's been filling the headlines since we left Silverstone has obviously been the Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen crash. And rightly or wrongly, Hamilton got the 10-second penalty. However, that wasn't good enough for Red Bull because he came through and took the win. So they were a wee bit annoyed about the whole thing. The damage cost that's been totaled up is £1.3 million, $1.8 million in dollars. And it's understandable that Christian Horner is going to be unhappy about it. So Christian has made comments that I don't think have went down too well. Or he's basically turned around and said that he thinks Hamilton was driving dirty. I don't think that's the case. But there is a history with Red Bull, Albon and Hamilton coming together. So Thursday came round, we get to Hungary and Red Bull obviously challenged the stewards' take on the accident and the 10-second penalty. And information came out about that the stewards noted with some concern certain allegations made by Red Bull. As to what that means, the suggestion was for Toto that, as he said, Hamilton driving dirty. Do you read in anything to this, guys? Do you think that's obviously the case? That Red Bull have obviously been trying to stir the pot, get him a bigger penalty, saying he's driving dirty. What's your take on it?
I think when you look at a lot of the stuff that we've heard over the past, I suppose over the past couple of days, it's really kind of kicked off. Yeah, okay, it's the right to put in that appeal again. Allegations, was he driving dirty? I don't think so. And I mean, I said last time that, you know, Hamilton deserved the penalty. It is what it is. It was a racing incident at the end of the day. Max couldn't get a penalty.
I mean, if we're apportioning any blame, we've got to turn around and say Hamilton was a bit optimistic with that type of overtake. Where it was a high-speed bend, but if these guys stop going for spaces like that, then there's no point watching the racing anymore because nobody's going to actually do an overtake. And the thing is, we see overtakes taking place, and it's because a driver's made another driver have to go wide to avoid an accident. We've seen it already this season with Hamilton and Max at Spain, we saw it at Imola. These types of incidents, somebody's got to blink. That's really what it comes down to. One of the drivers has got to say, you know what, I don't want to be in an accident. And normally it's the guy that's behind in the championship is the one that's got nothing to lose. And I think that's what happened at Silverstone. Hamilton was like, I need to catch up here. I will do anything and all things. And Max wasn't willing to, let's be honest, give up the position that probably would have got back two or three laps later. Well, the comments that Red Bull have been making, I think, are beyond what we expect for these types of things.
We mentioned last week about, actually, do you know what? The best thing that could happen is that we put it all behind us, we move on 2 weeks later, we move to a new track, and we start the race again, we start the championship pretty much over again. The drivers appear to be in that mindset. However, the teams themselves, because all these comments that are coming out are coming from Toto, they're coming for Christian.
Yeah.
It's not coming for the drivers. And I think, you know, I don't know if there's maybe a bit of, you know, they're looking to mess with people's heads. Maybe, you know, Christian Horner's trying to get Hamilton to kind of double think things. But at the end of the day, you know, the guy's got 7 world championships behind him. He's said this weekend he's not going to change the way that he's driving. I don't know if you've seen it, but breaking news about the member of staff from Red Bull that is no longer at Red Bull due to having made racist comments about Hamilton. So there was a statement come out from there. So I think all this nonsense that's coming from the teams is not helpful. It comes down to the whole point. If you're going to race cars at 200 miles an hour, you will have an accident at some point. Two of these cars that are 2 metres wide, 5 metres long, on these tracks at that kind of speed, they are going to come together, deal with it, make cheaper cars. It'll cost you $1.8 million to repair the damn thing. You just want to put it behind you, man. This is about racing.
Well, talking of the racing, we're obviously at Hungary. The Hungaro Ring's always a difficult track to overtake on. However, the first sequence of bends, turn one, turn two, and turn three, we've seen cars on the inside pushing cars off, and there's always mumbles and moans and all the rest of it. But that sequence of bends is where most of your overtakes happen. Maybe into turn four if somebody gets a run on them, but the rest of it's follow my leader. As for this weekend, however, FP1, we had Max at the top, Bottas and Hamilton, and there was only 0.2 of a second between them. Overall, the top five, we had Sainz and Gasly in there, and it was half a second. But we were looking at 1.17s, 0.5, 0.6, 0.7. And in the FP2, they'd taken half a second off of those times. We have Bottas, Hamilton and Max as the top three runners. And we're now down to 1.17.0 to 1.17.3. And there's only 0.3 between the top three. Now, we know Bottas qualifies well, he performs well in practice. When we get to the race, he kind of goes backwards. So if we discount him, because maybe if he is in the mix, great. But you kind of see Bottas going wheel to wheel with Max or Lewis and coming off best in it in any way, shape or form. So I think we can really talk about Max and Hamilton, because wherever they wind up, they're the two that we're going to be focusing on into turn one, into turn two. Do you think Max has got the mindset to put what's happened behind him and move on? So if that move comes up and he thinks, God, Hamilton's going to hit me again, what do I do? Do you think he'll take avoidant action, or will he just drive the same way as he always has done?
I think when you listen to them, they're telling you that they're not going to change their driving method, but there's got to be that wee voice. Yeah, they're all racers and they all want to win, but we're less than halfway through the season.
And you've got to get to the end of the race, yeah.
You know, to score points, you have to finish. And it's about consistent finishing. You don't have to, we know for a fact that you don't have to win every race to win the championship. There's going to have to be something in there. There's got to be something that gives, that says, actually, do you know what? Give up this corner, I can get him back again.
That's the thing. The past, what, five races, both Austria, UK, France, Canada, when you look back over that, it's only one win for Mercedes, and I think it was five for Red Bull, going all the way back to sort of Monaco. And that sounds like, wow, they must have ran away with it. But here we are. There's nothing in it between the two drivers. There's, what, 4 points or 8 points between them.
Yep.
And even the constructors has now been closed back up again because Red Bull scored nothing. Rightly or wrongly, however you want to look at it, they didn't score any points at Silverstone. I mean, let's be honest, Mercedes made hay while the sun was shining. And here we are, we're back. You said it right at the start of this. It feels like we're back at the start of the championship again. We're coming up to the end, the mid-season break. That's the first 11 races will be out of the way of the 23. But then we come back to Spa at the end of August. We've got 12 races over a 15-week period. 12 in 15. We're going to be busy on the podcast. That's all I can say. But the simple fact is that whatever we've got at this moment in time in the championships, it can all change, and we know that. We've seen it in the past. With, obviously, this particular track, Gareth, the tyres, we're using the middle range of tyres, but there's so many different strategies. We saw it last year. Max got done by what was a strategy, stroke of genius by Mercedes at the time, we thought. Him coming in, jumping onto a new set of tyres, and Max had nowhere to go. He couldn't come into the pits because he'd been overtaken and the undercut at that point. We saw it in Spain. Mercedes did the exact same thing. Can you see Red Bull falling for that this time out at Hungary? Can you see them making a tactical error like that? I mean, it will depend where Perez gets into the mix, to be honest. But if it's Max on his own, he's gonna be struggling again.
See, I think last week, 2 weeks ago, I think things could have been slightly different had Perez been further up the field.
Yeah.
And again, it comes down to, we need for the racing to be good and close and not have this two cars versus one for strategy. I think if Perez gets in the mix this weekend, it could kind of throw into that. But, you know, I've said before, I hate when people win off the back of strategy. Equally, you know, if you're caught with your pants down, you're going to lose. So, yeah. I think there's a good chance. And, you know, I think there's a fairly high chance of rain on Sunday.
Yes, so we've got 60% chance of showers, thundery showers on Sunday and 60% showers on Saturday. So everything's actually to play for. The temperature's got to be sitting up at 30 degrees air temperature, so the track's going to be sitting in at 50s. Those tyres, I mean, you wouldn't really want to touch the softs except for qualifying in Q3. Mediums or hards, I don't know. I don't know how the teams are going to play it, because they've got to keep the cars close to their chest on this one. And depending on what the weather does, will probably decide the race, I think. I think that'll decide it more than actually a strategy call on tyres. The other thing I wanted to talk about is, obviously, we're coming up to the mid-season break and the driver market is still kind of bubbling away in the background. We've spoke about, I think, nearly every episode, Bottas and Russell both qualify well, but in the race both seem to go backwards, but Russell's obviously in a car that predominantly is going to go backwards regardless. But that's still on the table. There's been rumours this weekend that Bottas is maybe looking at a move to Alfa Romeo, now that they don't have to sign a Ferrari driver into those seats, and Bottas apparently is more happy to do that than go to a Williams. Williams is obviously up in the air on their driver choices, and we also have AlphaTauri, who haven't confirmed their lineup for next year yet, but Gasly and Wartoni, I think, are probably nailed on.
As long as Wartoni stops reversing his car into the barriers, he might still be there. Seems to be his favourite parking method.
Come on, it's his first season in. You've got to turn around and say, go on, son, have a go, see what happens. Next season, once we're at 22 cars, you're going to have to learn it all again anyway, but just get some miles under your belt. And I think he'll be there. I think AlphaTauri is just dragging its heels on getting these guys signed with a new contract. Because Gasly, let's be honest, I mean, Perez, would you want to put Gasly back into a Red Bull? You've got Albon waiting in the wings. You don't want to touch these guys.
No, I don't think so. You know? Nah. I'd be surprised if either of those two end up back in a Red Bull. Gasly's performed far better since he went there, because I think that the pressure was off again. He's driven much better. You're Tony. I think, there's a good chance. I don't think he'll go anywhere, because he's got pace.
Yeah.
I mean, he's scored points. When we're talking about the likes of Bottas, I mean, he was at Williams before.
Yes,
sir. So I wouldn't see him going back there again.
Could you see the Alfa Romeo? You
don't know, because I mean, they had some of the young drivers in 2-3 races back.
True, but if you've got a new car, you want somebody with experience in there, because otherwise, somebody new to Formula One coming up for your series and a new car like that, that's a lot to ask. That's why I can't see. That's why I think a lot of the teams have locked in the drivers that they've actually got. The Alpines and the McLarens and all these types of teams, the Ferraris, they've all signed in people for long term on the contract, so that they're not having to come to next year's cars and be like, well, this is a new guy we're bringing in. I don't know how that's got to get on. The thing is, if all the cars are going to race as close as possible, we might see some guys coming out of the woodwork. We might see Mazepin becoming actually the driver that he is, and obviously or has been in FP2, being competitive. I'm not saying he's going to win races, and it might make people like Mick Schumacher shine once you've actually got these cars all so close to each other. But I think AlphaTauri's nailed on with A2. You wouldn't want to change them. Williams, Latifi, I don't know, keeping Latifi there. When you see what George Russell can do with the car, you need somebody like that to come in and be in the team. You can't have Latifi doing what he's doing. And
Latifi's just skiddling a bit at the back.
Yeah, and just going, oh, well, it's just Williams, it doesn't matter. Russell has shown what the car's capable of, and Latifi isn't performing anywhere near him. And they maybe, if they've got to be at the back anyway, maybe, but we just don't know what the cars are going to be. But Alfa Romeo, if Kimi Raikkonen leaves, because Kimi seems to be at that point that, well, he's making mere and mere mistakes and things like that, and his performances haven't set the world alight. But do you think Kimi's time's up? Do you think the team will push him? Or do you think Kimi will make the decision? Or again, stick him in a 22 car and he's up there having podiums.
I think the problem is Kimi is so difficult to read.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Kimi, you've just won the world championship. Yeah, that's great, thanks. You know, I think that whole piece about, do you want to come back next season? Do you want to stay on? Do you want to retire? There's no way of telling with him. It just seems so odd to be, you know, a lot of these teams, as you say, have got drivers tied down now for, you know, like a 2- and 3-year contract this early in the season. And I think this is where, for the likes of Bottas, if there is a move on the cards from, it makes it really difficult because a lot of these teams are gone, we're sorted. We don't need another driver. So I think it's going to be interesting as we get probably the mid-season break is going to see a lot of kind of contract talk. Yeah. It's going to have to for some of these guys.
I think the other problem that Bottas has is that he's on a wage at the moment, whereas when you look at Latifi as a paid driver, or his dad's going to help the team and stuff, things like that, and then you look at the Haas, and it's the same sort of situation there. Mazepin's a paid driver, and these teams maybe can't wind up paying. I don't know what Bottas is on. Say it's $10 million for the year. They can't turn around and pay that and justify it when they can get a driver in paying them $10 million to be in the seat. You're right. I think Bottas is between a rock and a hard place. He's got to have to make a decision, because I think the Russell thing's nailed on.
I think in reflection, when you look at the likes of Bottas, this is probably the sort of thing he should have been thinking about at the tail end of last season.
Yeah.
Where are my options? Because it was quite clear at that time, after George Russell had driven the car at the drop of a hat and actually was outperforming him, that was a red flag for him to go, do you know what, I need to check my options now while I still have them.
And maybe Bottas just needs to go away and rally for a couple of years and maybe try and come back. But it's going to be so difficult to come back into the field at that point with the new cars and what will be. Because if it's a more competitive field, everybody will look good. You know, if the field spreads only 30 seconds, then everybody's going to be, oh, he's actually not bad. You know, we wrote him off because he was 2 minutes down the road in a Haas. So we'll wait and see.
We've seen that so far anyway this year. Yeah, the midfield is so much closer this year, and we've had some really good racing with it. And it's made drivers look good.
It has,
yeah. It's also made others look not quite so good, but hey.
Well, let's talk about McLaren and Ferrari. Again, we're just going off the FP2 times, but McLaren, Norris in 9th, and we've got Ricciardo in 13th. Norris was 1.3 seconds off the pace, and Ricciardo was 1.7. And then we look at the Ferrari, we've got Leclerc in 11th, and we've got Sainz in 12th in FP2, 1.3 and 1.4 seconds off the pace. So they're actually, apart from Ricciardo, they're all on top of each other in the Ferrari-McLaren battle. Ricciardo is only, he's only 0.3 of a second outside Sainz. So hopefully, with this track, that big braking zone into turn one, if he's got his foot on the pedal and has gained the confidence that we know that he's
got confidence. I think that's what he had when he was driving the Renault. He started getting that back in again, where he was getting that last-minute brake and getting all the passes done. So it'd be good to see that coming back again, because that McLaren is a cracking car this year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. This is the FP2 times, and I mean, that's it. Norris in 9th. We expect him to qualify a lot higher. So we've got qualifying at 2 p.m. tomorrow. That's British summer time, and then the Grand Prix at 2 p.m. as well on Sunday. So you can join us after the qualifying. It'll be slightly later. We'll be looking at about 5-6 o'clock on Saturday for the podcast show. You can join us then, where I'll have Derek with us as well as Gareth. That's pretty much it. There's nothing else for me to say except it's goodbye for me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Take care. Stay safe, as Derek would say. This has been a Beautycat production for DNF1.